This is Dred Scott Keys. Join me on Thursday, December 25th from 10 a.m. to 12 noon for a holiday music special featuring the best in sounds from around the world. That's Thursday, December 25th from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on listener-sponsored non-commercial radio station WBAI in New York City.
It's almost time for Christmas.
My family doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, Jewish?
Uh-uh.
Muslim?
Uh-uh.
Buddhist?
Nope. My family doesn't practice any religion, and we don't believe in things that are supernatural.
But haven't they heard? There are many ways to enjoy and celebrate Christmas that are completely naturalistic.
Really?
Really, and this Christmas, they can learn all about having a perfectly wonderful naturalistic Christmas on Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Naturalistic Christmas Special?
That's right.
When?
From 3 to 5 on Christmas Day.
3 to 5 Christmas Day.
Right here on 99.5 WBAI.
And it is 99.5 FM WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Mike is stuck outside arguing with some lawyers. Long story. I guess what we should do right now is join the program that's scheduled for this time. Already in progress, ladies and gentlemen. The interview.
Face it, Dave, you have failed. You've made wild allegations, but you have proven nothing. You made this a long journey just to show the world that they were right about you. You are incapable of conducting a real interview. You're a joke.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, it sucks. Because I need people's approval. Desperately. Because I could never get it from my father when I was a kid. But I see a lot of the same thing in you, Kim. Your father deprived you of life's simplest pleasures. He told you that margaritas are gay.
I have no comment on margaritas.
Then why don't you drink them?
I don't like brain freeze.
Wow. Okay, I guess we had to stop there legally. The interview, folks. Yeah, well, you know, we were gonna play it on our website, but that is a portion of the film that I think you can get now in various places. It's going to be showing in theaters as early as tomorrow. And I think what we heard just now kind of epitomizes the whole tone of the movie, which is offensive, stupid, juvenile, ignorant, dumb, not very funny, But it's up to us to decide that on our own, I guess.
Yeah, it seems a little slapstick, too. I'm intrigued. I noticed in that scene, Seth Rogen's character gets several of his fingers bitten off.
Yeah, I wasn't actually watching from this part of the room, but I was listening. It was riveting dialogue. And the interesting thing about that was that you heard the voice of Kim Jong-un, or, you know, the voice of the actor portraying Kim Jong-un. I imagine that's probably a bounty on his head at this point. Bernie, was it as riveting for you over the telephone as it was for us here in the studio?
Yes, and I'm thrilled that that freedom won and the USA has prevailed. Isn't that how it worked out?
Well, that's how it's being portrayed in the media, and it's kind of funny how they manipulate the story in various ways. But boy, what a week! What a week of craziness and contradictory stories, and we got ourselves in the midst of it too for a little bit. Carly, want to outline what 2600's involvement with this?
Well, basically, we kind of started hearing a lot about the various pundits and news media talking about hackers, and the ridiculousness just got way out of control, and we kind of felt like somebody's got to weigh in and set this straight, because this is going in a really scary direction. If there was discussion of, you know, state retaliation and all this stuff, and that hackers again are to blame, this time North Korean hackers, but just lumping everyone in just completely, it just emphasized the ignorance. So we decided to do a couple things.
Well, here's what we did. We were watching the media, as we've talked about on this show over the last couple of weeks, and I was very disturbed with the way it was going, because it was hackers were being portrayed as people intimidating everybody else and saying, do not show this or there will be ramifications. And obviously, anyone who is familiar with the hacker world in any sense knows that's not what hackers are about. We don't go out and tell people to keep quiet or to not do something controversial, even if it sucks, because it's about freedom of speech. So what we did was, on our main page on 2600.com, you can still read the story, we posted an offer for Sony. In fact, we even discussed this last week on the radio.
Right.
We would be happy if they didn't want to air the film, they didn't want to have it in theaters, they didn't want to stream it, they didn't want to be attached to it in any way, and that's how it appeared last week. We would be happy to do that for them without any compensation whatsoever. We would figure out a way to do it and just have it. We'd take the heat. We'd have all the attacks from all these evil people that they imagined are out there. And the world can decide for themselves if this film sucks or doesn't.
Yeah, and we basically took on that that risk and waited to see if we could get the okay. Because, of course, we didn't want to be particularly flouting copyright restrictions, things like these. So we put out an appeal. We made the offer, and boy, we heard quite a bit.
Well, we got wind from, well, first of all, it was just bounced all over the place. Everybody was talking about it. I thought that was kind of cool. And people saw the humor in it, because it was meant, you know, half tongue in cheek, and also calling their bluff, because we didn't really believe that they were that afraid.
Yeah, and also given the history with the MPAA, I mean, that was really well outlined, I think, in the article.
We did have a history with Sony, MPAA being sued back in 2000, so we figured, hey, you know, we want to make it clear we don't have any bad feelings towards you guys. So
we accept the irony.
And it's a shame that you're being intimidated, because you're so good at using intimidation as a tactic. And it's as soon as you feel any intimidation, you kowtow to it. So, you know, it was like I said, half tongue in cheek. But we got a lot of response, a lot of support. And then the media came after us. And we had pieces on BBC and CNN basically just saying that, we'll do this if they can't. And of course, I think yesterday they finally decided, okay, we'll do it, which tells me they were going to do it all along, because you can't just decide that in one day.
Yeah, it seems like they made the right calls and got a bunch of other people to partner with them and help them do it in the way they're doing it now, given the reaction from, like, the attack or whatever you want to call it with North Korea.
Right. Well, Mike's here. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike was doing battle with lawyers outside, and I think he drove them all away.
If that's what we want to tell the people.
Well, we can't tell the people everything, obviously, but...
Well, of course not.
We'll tell them what we're told to tell them. But here's what we're told to tell you now from North Korea. We actually were able to get through to their website. That's another thing that the media was very curious about. Did the United States take North Korea off the internet? First of all, two weeks ago, the story would have been that North Korea has no internet. There is no internet connection. They don't have access. But then all of a sudden, North Korea lost their internet connection, and the story kind of changed a little bit. So, yeah, they do have some internet, but it's mostly going into websites. Very few people have access going out. Wasn't really that big a deal, and it's quite obvious that anybody with access to denial-of-service tools could have pulled this off fairly easily. They don't have that much.
It was also a weekend, and there was all this media attention.
Even North Korea didn't jump on this. Even they didn't say the United States was behind all these attacks on us and issue all their usual threats.
So the website you were on, because many of North Korea's official websites are not actually hosted in North Korea.
Right. This one supposedly was. It has the KEP.
Well, you can,
TLD.
As you know, you can put a TLD anywhere.
Absolutely.
In the world.
It also fell within their IP range, which is very, very small, by the way. It was down when they said their internet was down, so I think that was probably the proof.
I'm convinced, but, you know, it requires a lot of convincing.
And it has a story. I'm not going to read this whole story because it goes on for 4 pages, but basically the title of the story is U.S. urged to honestly apologize to mankind for its evil doing before groundlessly pulling up others. Yes, it's a catchy headline. Just to sum it up, the Policy Department of the National Defense Commission of the DPRK issued the following statement Sunday. Strange thing that happened in the heart of the U.S., the ill-famed cesspool of injustice, is now afloat in the world as shocking news. You see, if the so-called threat from the hackers had sounded anything like that, then I would believe it was from North Korea. The fact that it just sounded like something from IRC told me it could have been anybody.
What was that quote? Cesspool of justice?
Yeah, cesspool of justice. Cesspool of injustice.
Cesspool of injustice. Yeah. I like that. I want to get that on a
t-shirt. And it's now afloat in the world as shocking news. I just love the imagery. The Sony Pictures Entertainment, the biggest movie producer in the U.S., which produced the undesirable reactionary film, The Interview, daring hurt the dignity of the supreme leadership of the DPRK and agitating even terrorism and had a plan to distribute it, was exposed to surprisingly sophisticated, destructive, and threatening cyber warfare and has been thrown into a bottomless quagmire after suffering property losses worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The public in the U.S. is now describing this case as disgrace suffered by Sony Pictures Entertainment. Very sorry thing caused by the U.S. Sony Pictures Entertainment showing a white flag before hackers and the unprecedented disaster suffered by the U.S. Those who meted out a stern punishment of justice were reported to be cyber experts styling themselves guardians of peace. Well, like I said, there's another 3 pages of this, but it's pretty riveting stuff.
Emmanuel.
Go ahead, Bernie.
I think amongst those 4 pages, there is something where the North Korean government says that the United States government had a hand in the content of this film, The Interview. And I thought that was kind of outlandish until some of the leaked Sony documents indicated that top Sony executives were in touch with top-level U.S. State Department officials who enthusiastically embraced the assassination scene where Kim Jong-un was basically burned and blown up.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that they can point to the emails that were leaked as evidence.
Yeah.
I also saw a piece, which this was priceless, of the Sony CEO giving an interview, and boy, did he look tired, where he was basically talking about what they were going through. And he made a point of saying that I forget what the actual position was he was espousing, what the particulars were, but he said, yes, this is what I was saying all along, and those of you who have my email can look at it and see for yourself that I've been saying this. So it's great that he can actually have a sense of humor there and point to his exposed emails to back up his positions. Is this story over? God, I hope so. It's been going on way too long. Of course, the ramifications for Sony are going to last for much, much longer. They are in sorry shape. All their information is out there, and they're still threatening people. They're threatening Twitter now. They say that if Twitter does not remove tweets containing links to hacked emails, they're going to take them to court. And of course, that is resulting in the Streisand effect. Everybody is reacting against that. I don't know. It smacks of desperation to me. What do you guys think?
Can we just go back to, like, not caring at all about this almost certainly terrible film?
Well, you can go back outside and talk to the lawyers, but this is the story of the year as far as corporate America.
Is that really true? That's really sad.
We live in a sad world, Mike. Go ahead, Rob.
As far as this film goes, I mean, I'm a great believer in what was said by the great film critic Jay Sherman, where if the movie stinks, just don't go. But this movie, which would have been, I think, just a flicker on the radar, just, you know, another largely forgetting, stupid sort of bro comedy movie, now that it has all this international incident and intrigue and stuff attached to it, and now that this fiasco has stirred up all this anti-DPRK sentiment in the mainstream, where they're like, oh yeah, we beat you, Korea, we're releasing this film now the film is going to be a success. I think it's going to make tons of money for Sony.
I don't really agree that's going to be a success. I think people will see it as crap. And I think, I'm very optimistic, I think people will see that they've been manipulated by not only the U.S. government, but by Sony themselves, because we're like you said, we're saying these things, which are just too easy. It's just too easy to reach these conclusions. And I think if you listen to the cyber experts out there, as they're called in the mass media, you will hear them saying, hey, there's no real evidence here. The United States is not sharing the evidence to say that that North Korea was behind this hack in the first place. And if you listen to what the United States said when North Korea came forward and said, we want to investigate with you, they said, if you really want to help, you'll admit your guilt. And that is such an Orwellian phrase to say that, yeah, if you want to help us, just say you're guilty and that's it. You know,
I think they also asked North Korea if they stopped beating their wives yet. So,
well, they have some good training as far as that goes. Okay, but that's all we got on this. We have other things to discuss as well. It's Christmas Eve. It's a special time of year, and the city is just embracing together in all kinds of unity and peace and all that. No, it's actually crazy out there. Did you see this story? Of course, the horrible story about what happened to the cops in Brooklyn, being killed by a lunatic who came up from Baltimore and used the name of one of the people that was killed by the NYPD as justification. And of course, the mass media again has jumped all over this and tried to label demonstrators as the same thing, as equivalent to people who kill others in cold blood. But this guy in Massachusetts, he put a phrase on his Facebook page that said he wanted to put wings on pigs. And that was the phrase that was used by the gunman on social media right before he went and killed two NYPD officers. Chicopee Police Department in Massachusetts will file a criminal complaint against the 27-year-old who posted "Put Wings on Pigs" on Monday. I should point out, this is not "Pigs on the Wing" by Pink Floyd. I think that's still okay. You can say that. On Saturday, Ishmael Brinsley posted, "I'm putting wings on pigs today. They take one of ours, let's take two of theirs," on Instagram alongside a photo of a gun. And then we all know what happened after that. Considering Saturday's murders, the Massachusetts Police Department took this person's post very seriously after Facebook users informed the force about the twisted, cryptic message. It's nice to know that your Facebook followers will report you if you say something like this, but that's part of the beauty of social media.
Yeah, I love all the self-policing that was being encouraged there.
In the eyes of every police officer in America today, putting wings on pigs is a threat, said Chicopee Police Department spokesman Michael Wilk. And apparently, if you say that now, you will be charged with a crime. And I think that's kind of insane.
All right, I mean,
go ahead, Bernie.
Each other.
It's also noteworthy that the Chicopee Police Department, where this guy is, also gave all of his info, like where he lives, his name, all contact information, to all the surrounding police departments. So I wouldn't want to be this guy right now. But frankly, this statement, put wings on pigs, end quote.
I don't even know what it means. What does it mean?
Not a threat. It's not a threat. It's not about anything specific. It's open to interpretation. And, I mean, I hope this guy has a good constitutional lawyer, because clearly this is repugnant speech, but it is protected speech.
Well, I don't even know if it's repugnant speech because I don't know what the context is. I don't understand what it means. Maybe somebody could explain that.
To me, it's two things being conflated, like when pigs fly and then like angels, right? So when you die, you get wings, right? Another angel gets its wings.
Well, isn't that a good thing? You know, I don't want to get into this, but isn't that a good thing? You call somebody an angel, but...
It's just a stupid phrase.
You have to look at intent, not just words. And we're falling into this trap yet again. So it's something to look out for and not jump the gun.
But when pigs fly, that's an expression that's like, it'll never happen.
Uh-huh.
So it kind of doesn't make sense.
There's nothing in the story to indicate this person even had any knowledge of what was going on down here. I don't know what other post he had. Rob?
I just think if you've tweeted or Facebook posted or anything the song I Shot the Sheriff, you might want to go and delete that post now.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's that, too. So, yeah, the city's kind of torn apart. The country's kind of torn apart. Interesting times here. I don't know. I don't know where it's going, but we'll keep following it here, especially with regards to connectivity and social media and all that. Speaking of which, Bernie, I know you're going to love this story. Apparently, hotels in the United States would like to block personal Wi-Fi hotspots that guests might bring with them. The FCC will soon decide whether to lay down rules regarding hotels' ability to block personal Wi-Fi hotspots inside their buildings, a practice that recently earned Marriott International a $600,000 fine. Back in August, Marriott business partner Ryman Hospitality Properties and the trade group the American Hotel and Lodging Association asked the FCC to clarify when hotels can block outside Wi-Fi hotspots in order to protect their internal Wi-Fi services, it sounds like it's protecting their revenue, not their internal Wi-Fi services. Now, in that petition, the hotel group asked the agency to declare that the operator of a Wi-Fi network does not violate U.S. law by using FCC-authorized equipment to monitor and mitigate threats to the security and reliability of its network, even when taking action that causes interference to mobile devices. Now, the comment period has already ended, so now it's up to the FCC to either agree to Marriott's petition or disregard it. Bernie, what do you think will happen here?
Well, since the FCC has already analyzed this situation and decided to fine this Marriott partner $600,000, I kind of doubt they're going to change their mind, but it's an interesting case because the hotel was not accused of performing RF jamming, you know, like a cell phone jammer where you just broadcast noise to jam any signal on that frequency. They were sending special packets to cause third-party Wi-Fi devices to drop packets and not connect to the hotel's network, which is a little different. It's interfering, but it's not RF interference. So it's really an interesting legal decision, and it's going to be interesting to see what the FCC decides ultimately in this.
I mean, I think it's hard to predict the legal thing, but is there any technical merit to Marriott's claim, in your opinion, that they're defending anything other than their revenue stream? It seems pretty blatant to me.
Obviously, this was just a profit grab, and they were just trying to prevent anybody from they wanted everybody to purchase their devices for $250 to $1,000 a day to access their Wi-Fi network. Clearly, that's what was going on here. I think they have a slight legal argument, but I think the overall argument is in the FCC's favor on this. But they were not performing RF jamming. They were sending packets. It'll be interesting to see what's going on. This.
Well, my other question concerns people using their phones as links to the internet by blocking jamming. Won't they be also cutting off people's phone service?
No, this was only to connect to Marriott's Wi-Fi network. The phones trying to access the internet through this Marriott partner's Wi-Fi network would get their packets dropped. But if they were accessing the internet through their mobile carrier, you know, like cellular internet connectivity, this would not have affected those people at all. Likewise, if people had connected their computer to their cell phone through a physical cable, like a USB cable, this would not have prevented that. Or maybe through Bluetooth, it wouldn't have prevented their connecting to the internet that way. But most people just wanted to connect via Wi-Fi to this Marriott partner's internet, and it wasn't working. The connection would drop right away.
Interesting. Well, it just goes to show that there's no boundary to the liberties that companies will take when it comes to restricting access. Here is something that I think is kind of weird and unusual, and I don't know if you guys have heard about this. The U.S. Army plans to launch two stationary blimps at 10,000 feet in the air next week to better protect the Washington, D.C. area from cruise missiles and other possible air attacks. Yeah, it's part of a three-year test by the North American Aerospace Defense Command of the so-called JLEN system, which is designed to work with already existing air defense technology. The tethered large balloons, called aerostats, carry technology that will almost double the reach of current ground radar detection. The JLEN's manufacturer, Raytheon Corporation, says the system can provide radar coverage to an area the size of Texas. So if you live in D.C., I don't know if this will be visible to you, but you'll have blimps in the air at all times looking out for cruise missiles.
Washington,
and
D.C.
other things,
is,
probably.
Sorry, go ahead.
Washington, D.C. is considerably smaller than Texas. I mean, this is, I'm glad to hear that the Defense Department is still fighting the Cold War so shortly after the Cuba thaw, but I don't understand even the logistical merits of defending a Texas-sized area around Washington. I mean, I think, like, New York to Washington is smaller than Texas.
Well, okay, regardless of how much space it takes up, it's going to be kind of weird to get used to blimps in the air defending us. That's something that we're going to have to going to have to see.
It's not the first time.
It's not the first time. Tell us.
No, the U.S., I think it was the Navy, had stationed these aerostat blimps off the coast of South Florida to surveil the ocean and between Cuba and Florida, ostensibly for immigrants and smugglers and that sort of thing. So this is this technology has been used for decades by the U.S. military, but this is, to my knowledge, is the first time where it's being used to surveil the American people in an area, as Mike pointed out, far larger than Washington, D.C. These things can see, like, a couple hundred miles, and they have extremely high-resolution cameras, and you can bet there's sensors on this thing that have nothing to do with looking for cruise missiles.
Wait, why do you have to look at the ground to look for cruise missiles?
Well, because they come from the ground.
Well, not from D.C., hopefully.
So the threat model is that someone's going to sneak a cruise missile battery into, I don't know, Delaware or something, and aim it at Washington, and this blimp will see it before it fires?
Yes, or as it's traveling, so they can do some sort of intercept sort of thing. I don't know. I suspect this has a lot more to do than this has got to a lot more. This has something to do not just with cruise missiles. I'm sure there's other surveillance intended by this platform.
Even by the standards of the post 9/11 paranoid security state, this seems awfully unlikely.
Yep.
Does anybody know what JLAN stands for? Nobody? Because I have it in front of me. Okay, it stands for Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile Defense Elevated Netted Sensor. It seems like they have more words in there than they had letters, but yeah. Okay, so that's that. We have this interesting story out of Mississippi. Attorney General Jim Hood of Mississippi on Friday agreed to call a timeout in his fight with Google after the internet giant filed a lawsuit accusing him of conspiring with the movie industry. Yeah, the move by Mr. Hood, who has been one of Google's most outspoken critics, came only hours after the company asserted in its lawsuit that Mr. Hood had been improperly influenced by major Hollywood studios that are trying to crack down on the distribution of pirated movies on the internet. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in Mississippi, had also questioned the authority of state law enforcement officials to regulate internet service providers. In a statement, Mr. Hood said Google was using its deep pockets in an attempt to stop the state of Mississippi for daring to ask some questions. Nevertheless, he said he would call the company and try to work out a deal. Wow. In an attempt to resolve some of the problems the state's chief law enforcement officers have raised, I am calling a timeout so that cooler heads may prevail, he said. He added he would contact Google's board to negotiate a peaceful resolution to the issues affecting consumers that we attorneys general have pointed out in a series of 8 letters to Google. So, wow, giants fighting in the playground. It's interesting times ahead. The movie industry, Google, attorneys general.
Is this really the, you said this is in Missouri, right?
Yes.
This is really
Mississippi.
Oh, sorry. This is really the top law enforcement priority for Mississippi is defending the entertainment industry?
I don't know if it's the top priority, but it became an issue when Google filed a lawsuit. So now that's when I first heard about it.
It's all very strange.
Bernie, I believe you submitted this, a special a bit of information for this holiday season. Each year, the residents of McMurdo Station in Antarctica celebrate Christmas by singing Christmas carols to the remote Antarctic field camps on the HF radio. This year, they're asking ham radio operators around the world to listen in and email shortwave listening reports telling everybody how far away the carols have been heard. You can listen on 7995 kilohertz USB on, hopefully we didn't miss this, the 24th of December at 2300Z. What does 2300Z mean, Bernie?
Zulu time. It's the same as universal time.
Really? So it's like Greenwich time?
Yes, Zulu time.
All right, I like that better, 2300Z. And December 25th, 1200 New Zealand time. And email reports to w2naf@arri.net. And for a Christmas in Antarctica SWL QSL card, you can send them an SASE, and they will be happy to send that to you. But I don't know if we actually miss this or if any ham radio people out there will be doing this. I've never actually heard anything from Antarctica as far as...
No, they're going to be broadcasting Christmas carols from a 1,000-watt station in Antarctica, which is kind of neat. And the frequency, 7995 kilohertz, should not be confused with 6995 kilohertz, which is favored by a lot of North American pirate broadcasters. So while you're tuning around, drop down 1 megahertz to 6995, and you'll probably hear some other really interesting unauthorized broadcasts.
Yes. Well, and that's pretty much all we have today. We'd like to take phone calls on this Christmas Eve, 212-209-2900, if people have thoughts about the end of the year, what's happened throughout 2014. A couple of us are going to be at the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg, starting in a couple of days on the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th of December. And Kyle, you looking forward to that?
Oh yeah, totally.
It's going to be something. I've never actually been to this particular event in this particular city. Mike, you were there last year, right?
Yeah, last year. It's a huge venue, and I'm a bit jealous of you. That
but
you're
already
going
went, so you shouldn't be jealous.
Well, but you know, it's a great event, and I will say, I found the new big space a bit overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be one of those people who say, you know, I preferred it before it got quite so giant. But
well, can you get lost in it? Is it that big?
It's pretty big. The wayfinding signs, as they say, are pretty good, but it's a giant space. You can forget where you are.
I forget where I am all the time.
Well, then you'll have an easy time of doing it in this space.
So if anybody else is going over there, please write to us, oth@2600.com. I'm sure we'll run into you over there in Hamburg. And, of course, we're looking to visit other places as well in the area. And explore and meet new people and talk about all kinds of mischief for 2015.
And we will be on the radio next week on Wednesday, though it's New Year's Eve. Some of you will be over there. Some of us will be here, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, we're not preempted or anything. So yeah, tune in.
I don't know where we're going to be, but it's going to be New Year's Eve, and it's probably going to be midnight when we call in. So we've done shows like that in the past, but it's going to be particularly crazy.
So we'll get to talk to people in the next year while it's still 2014.
Yes, we've done that trick before, and it'll be just as magical. Hey, let's take some phone calls. Hear from our listeners. We have some extended time for this. We are a live program here at WBAI. Many shows are on tape right now because it's Christmas Eve, but we're crazy enough to come in here, so let's talk to some people. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Oh, well, what's on my mind is that I'd like to say that the situation with the cop shooting, I mean it's sad, yes, it's sad, but you see, we got to remember something that This situation with the protests, the nationwide situation, is a is a boiling pot right now. And you got a lot of people in this society that is off the hook. And this society produced a lot of mental illness. So, you know, basically, you know, the police is going to have to ease down. I think Abrazio is going to have to, you know, take a look and talk to the people, talk to the New Yorkers and listen, you know, we got to calm down and develop a dialogue. If dialogue is needed, I'm going to get your feedback on it.
Well, it seems like that's what he's trying to do, is get a dialogue going of some sort. And he doesn't seem to be treated fairly on both sides, I've seen. It's a bridge that needs to be, it's a gap that needs to be bridged. And like you said, cooler heads need to prevail.
As hackers, we're generally about opening dialogues and talking things out and getting people, enabling people to express how they're feeling about things, whether it's via protests or, you know, posting online or doing whatever, just getting the discussion going rather than trying to quell that expression.
Is that it? Anything else?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for that call. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. It's PK. I own a Colesman Airspeed from a Goodyear blimp. The Goodyear blimps were the quintessential war blimp of World War II. They made 99 of them that they would admit to.
Is that a radar?
Anything such as radar that you mount in a blimp does extremely, extremely well as propagating.
Yeah, but what you have, what are you talking about?
No, I have the Airspeed from one, which will tell you. So I know quite a bit about the blimps and their war uses, and they were officially discontinued in 1962 in Lakehurst, but they actually have a number of bases, even private bases, up near the Great Lakes, down in Pompano, and, of course, Lakehurst. And there were 99 of them all the way up north in South America, mainly harassing the Germans. And they're capable of many things that are interesting even to this day. For instance, a Goodyear blimp, the airspeed pegs at 47 miles an hour, but it can do that straight up. So it's like a moon launch when it wants to get away from a submarine. And when it goes to altitude, to its maximum altitude, all its radio capabilities are immense. It normally carries 6 people, but if you put 2 or 3 in on a mission, you can send it up for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And it can just harass the enemy forever. And you don't use them full time. They're almost whole seasons when you tie them up and you put them away. But when they come out, they cover for other services and they do them better. And they save an enormous, enormous amount of resources. And it's like a trick up your sleeve. That's literally what a blimp is.
Right, because it's not in the air with like consuming fuel with like a combustion of any way. At least any of it is really nominal for the amount of time it can hang.
What's the difference between an aerostat and a blimp?
No, an aerostat is just considered a tethered blimp, such as we used in World War One and Two, the barrage blimps, and it's more of a it's more of a term than anything else. Anything with an engine is a blimp. They actually predate aircraft by many years. They were used even in Paris and well back into the 1800s and stuff for private use. But the Goodyear is absolutely, for instance, you take the Mayflower and its two buddies, they are the survivors of the whole bunch. They're literally World War II blimps. It's the same gondolas all these years later. There's no steering wheel. You throw the rudder about 2 or 3 feet with your foot, and that's the rudder. And then there is a separate wheel on the side that you turn, and that's the stabilizer. And they're not reliable for a perfect vertical climb, but a nearly perfect vertical climb. It's like I said, it's like a moon launch. The minute an enemy submarine puts up a periscope and is detected, if the blimp wants to get away, it pulls straight up, and it just shoots into the sky. It's like launching a Saturn V rocket. And it will actually have to curve that trajectory when it reaches near where the expansion envelopes can no longer take the air. It suddenly has to level off and go flat. They're very maneuverable. You can they bank when they turn. You can actually do a physical loop with a blimp if you pull it hard enough and stuff. It'll flop around. It's quite an object, and they have a huge number of spare engines, spare parts left over from the 99 blimps they disassembled after World War II. But officially, the service came to an end in 62. It was mainly about embarrassment and stuff. But if you go down to Lakehurst, which is like their primary location where they have the greatest indoor area, it's a museum. But you actually need some clearance, and you want to give them a courtesy call before you go visit it. I have an Colesman airspeed, sensitive airspeed. It makes two full turns to show 47 miles an hour. That's 42 knots. And that tells you when they hit, you know, when the, those two custom engines hit throttle, they book along. That's what they're going to argue with the weather. So they could be up for a matter of hours, or they could be up for several weeks. You know, they might carry stationary food, and, of course, you always carry a coffee can and lots of toilet paper.
That is really interesting. I wish we had a little bit more time. I learned a lot about blimps. I had no idea. And hopefully the ones that are being deployed in D.C. will do the tremendous job they're built for, keeping people off the White House lawn.
Yes. Well, I mean, it goes to show that there's really no topic our BAI listeners don't know something about. And blimps, I don't think we've ever really devoted that much time to them. Thank you very much for that info. And I'm sure we'll be calling upon your expertise in the future as blimps become more prevalent in our society. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. By the way, our phone number 212-209-2900. Go ahead.
It's Tom from the Bronx here.
How you doing?
I'd like to say that this wacky movie that was made, I think whoever is putting this movie out may be trying to incite the citizens of North Korea, maybe the army, to turn on its great leader, you know?
Yeah, you think. Well, that's definitely been bandied about as a possibility.
In other words, he's so wonderful that... that I think a lot of people just dislike him, that's all.
Under normal circumstances, I think it's very easy to picture this movie as just being some kind of flash in the pan, that it would happen, it would be in theaters, it would be out on video, whatever, and everyone would eventually forget about it. But because of what happened surrounding this movie, that's what's built it up into a big thing. That's what's incited all kinds of things. And, you know, maybe whoever's behind this attack, maybe the incitement is what they wanted, because that's what they got.
See, I think it's proven a tremendous inspiration to the kids of today, because they realize that anybody can make a movie. And they'll be inspired to do something themselves. And whatever they come up with, I'm sure will be better. Looks like the blimp remarks have resulted in a full switchboard. So let's go over to another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Speak up, please. Go ahead. Okay, we have to move on. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey.
Go ahead.
Oh,
speak up, please. Go ahead.
So you were talking about the Marriott thing earlier.
Yes, we were, the Marriott Hotel.
So the thing with that is that their application is kind of weird, because while it starts off saying, here are the facts, you know, Wi-Fi involves both broadcasting on RF frequency as well as dealing with classic issues with TCP/IP networks. But the application is for new rulemaking, which kind of bridges both and conflates them. So while they start talking about how you need to be able to manage people trying to spoof the SSID of the hotel's Wi-Fi network to create a rogue AP or try to generate man-in-the-middle attacks, that sort of thing, on a hotel's network, and that's their concern as they state it. But the rules that they propose also bridge the gap into giving them the ability to interfere on the RF side of this system.
So, I mean, the thing I'm thinking about is if they get their way and it becomes legal to, you know, defend your Wi-Fi network against other interloper Wi-Fi networks or whatever, then if I have, you know, a personal Wi-Fi hotspot in a Marriott, and can I defend my personal Wi-Fi against the Marriott Wi-Fi? I mean, this could quickly escalate.
Yeah, well, the that's sort of the thing, and the at least from what I've been able to figure out from their very dense legalese that they use in their FCC application, which is available on the FCC's website. They seem to be trying to get a special exemption from, I believe it's Section 333 rules for the hotels or the premises network operator to be able to interfere or block other operators whose Wi-Fi networks somehow impinge on their physical territory.
My big problem with this is they're not using the technology as well as I think they can, and they're saying that any access point is off limits because we're not going to do security, and or we're not going to implement technologies that have the appropriate channel, I don't know what you'd call bandwidth, or the ability to handle a lot of frequencies for their network, and as well as accommodating other people's wireless. Now, I'm not a wireless expert, but I do think the rationale seems like a huge overstep.
That's basically what's going on, I think, is that they're using the small issue of, the possibility of man-in-the-middle attacks, which, you know, might be a legitimate concern, to get sweeping sort of exemptions passed for themselves, which would enable them to pursue their business interests, not just protect their security interests.
Yeah, and I think with, like, things like 802.11a, which is 5 gigahertz technology, you end up being able to break the spectrum up and accommodate more users. I know when we're overseas or when we're dealing with our conference, that's an issue. Stuff like that, it seems like they're avoiding evolving their own infrastructure and rather going to this like reactionary thing of like, well, we're going to just make everybody else's networks off limits, which is ludicrous. Everyone has a hotspot on their phone now, and it just seems overreaching and silly.
Absolutely. And there's actually a kind of an interesting section, which depending on exactly how you read what they've written in this application, there's actually a section where they seem to be claiming that the limited bandwidth of older versions of the 802.11 specification,
right,
A and B particularly, is actually a justification for them to be able to block other people operating Wi-Fi networks on their physical premise.
Exactly. And to say nothing of the fact that they're not proactively dealing with people who, yeah, maybe spoofing SSID, maybe doing man-in-the-middle stuff, but that's their job, okay? You know.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it seems like there are better ways for them, if they have someone creating rogue APs on their property. I know a lot of major network equipment vendors do sell products that are specifically designed to allow them to a network manager or operator to specifically deal with that specific occurrence.
Right.
That, as far as I know, has never been found to run afoul of FCC regulations.
And it's fascinating because we've seen so many times that big business, when they try to, as Kyle was saying, hold back their own technological development in pursuit of their own business interests, that's never worked. It the music industry tried it. The video industry tried it. Everyone keeps trying this again and again to try and, like, enforce things that are not reasonable given the current technological environment. But they'll still try and do it. They'll still try and, go down that path. And it's never worked, I don't think.
I mean, the amount of money they're spending on this regulatory filings and fines and the products themselves, they must be making a lot of excess revenue from their overpriced Wi-Fi service to continue to protect this line of business.
$1,000 a day.
Yeah.
For what?
For accessing their Wi-Fi network at a Marriott partner hotel.
Wait, I've stayed in hotels, I've overpaid for Wi-Fi, but $1,000?
Who's paying $1,000 a day?
This is for their conference facility.
It's
they want
true.
To charge between $250 and $1,000 per device to access their network, which is just an insane, crazy dollar grab. It's just a prop. This is all about money and profit. It's not about protecting networks.
I feel ripped off at 12.
Well, and that's the crux of it is people want access. They want this technology. In any other context, we would talk about information services as a human right and all of these kind of lofty ideals. And here we are bickering over.
We see the reaction when you try to take that away from people. In Hungary, for instance, recently there were protests in the street about an internet tax. And they have a dictator now. And their dictator backed off and said, okay, we won't have an internet tax this year, but next year maybe. I'm not kidding either. I've heard the news reports about this, and it's awfully entertaining. But they point to a place like Estonia where it's given out free to everybody. And I'm not sure if that's true either. I haven't been to Estonia in a while. But if internet access is something that's handed out like candy, well, but candy's not free either. I don't know. It's different in different places. And I think people really are getting very protective of their access. Once they have it, they don't want to let it go.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Caller, thank you very much for those that insight there.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care. 212-209-2900. I like taking phone calls. We have all this extra time today because, well, we're kind of laid back on a holiday. Let's see who else is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, I don't like that. Okay, try this one. Good evening. You're... The same person called on two lines. Okay, well, I don't like it when the phone system misbehaves. 212-209-2900. I know we had a bunch of people calling in. Please call back because we have no lines ringing now. So if you're ringing, you're ringing someplace that we can't get to. 212-209-2900. And, of course, if you want to write to us, oth@2600.com.
Did you know that there's a lawsuit against Edward Snowden and Laura Poitras and all these people around the film Citizen Four?
Who is stupid enough to sue them? How would you even sue Edward Snowden?
You can sue anyone you want. Okay. I don't know how you would enforce a judgment. Fortunately, this lawsuit seems to be particularly insane. The person suing is the former secretary of the Kansas Department of Transportation. He's got a Q security clearance, whatever
why
that is.
Somebody from the Kansas Department of Transportation. First of all, I didn't know they even had that. Why would they care so much about Edward Snowden and Laura Poitras?
He's very offended that these folks are, as he alleges, profiting off of the leak of classified information. I guess it's not a leak if it's intentional, but I think this is a lawsuit that's not going to go anywhere, but it's sort of amusing to read, and I really hope it doesn't go anywhere.
So for your holiday reading, you recommend the lawsuit from the Kansas Department of Transportation, or the guy from the Kansas Department of Transportation against Edward Snowden? And
he's
Laura
the
Poitras.
Former secretary. He's not acting in his official capacity.
So he has
he's
extra time.
Yeah, yeah. His name is Horace B. Edwards. And, I mean, the insane thing is that... you know, particularly some of the film distributors who actually have assets in the United States are going to have to waste their time defending this lawsuit. But
I remember reading that this guy is in his lawsuit. It's alleged that he's bringing the lawsuit about on behalf of the American people, which he doesn't have my permission to do as an American person.
Right. And the U.S. government itself certainly does not lack for lawyers if it thought this lawsuit was going to go anywhere.
What's his standing on this anyway? I don't even think he has standing.
As far as I can tell, and I am so not a lawyer, I shouldn't even answer, but I'm going to answer anyway, and as far as I can tell, he has none.
But that didn't stop him, and so it shouldn't stop us from commenting on it. Oh, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Oh, you're ready for me. I got a corny joke for Christmas, and then I have a serious question. Serious question first. Why does the... Triple Play Cablevision from Long Island, New York, phone company continue to cut off, and many other companies continue to cut off my continuous ringing when I'm trying to call into the show or something else.
Well, that's not just Cablevision. That's Verizon. That's every single company that you can think of that simply says, hey, this phone's still ringing. We're not making anything off of it, and we're going to cut it off, make the person dial again. Used to be you could just call and make a phone ring all weekend long if you wanted to, but those days are over.
It's funny that you put it that way because this is a flat rate per month, you know, so they're making their money. But, yeah, I understand.
You're still tying some kind of resource up and not using it. And I don't know. It's just that's the default now. People have accepted it, and it's very hard to get something like that back. But, yeah, it's a pain in the ass. I know. If you're calling into BAI and we've got a bunch of calls, there's no way you can stay on all that long. The only option is for us to answer all the calls, put them on hold, and then go to them one by one.
Right, or everyone just crash at BAI and won't be anymore. That'd be cool.
Was that the corny joke?
We're really pumping out a lot of hot air, and there's so much hot air on phone calls, because this is a telephone show, that it could float How many blimps do you think could be floated with all the hot air from all the telephone calls that have ever happened?
Well, that's something to think about for a little while anyway.
I'm a scale model maker. I actually made a model of the Hindenburg out of paper in the for the paper model in my model-making curriculum.
Well, keep it away from flame.
Yeah. Okay,
you don't want
guys,
the same fate. All right, take care.
Great show.
212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up.
Hi.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
We hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Just a quick question. Not necessarily off the hook.
Are you at a holiday party? It sounds like there's a lot of commotion going on back there.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm riding home from my job. I'm on the PATH train.
Oh, okay. The PATH train. Say no more. I understand.
Are the BIA archives dead forever, or I can't get anyone to answer this question?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What's going on with them?
We were trying to access something in the BIA archives ourselves, and we were unable to, and we share your pain in trying to get answers. And let me also take this opportunity to say that we have had a hell of a time trying to get answers on premium situations. Where we stand now, we believe everything has been sent out up to and including the Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks flash drives. However, we're now hearing that some people haven't gotten those. In fact, we're even hearing that some people have gotten the HopeX flash drives instead, which is impossible because we haven't given those to the radio station yet. Or actually, no, people that were waiting for the Hope X drives have gotten the Edward Snowden drive. So I'm trying to get answers from management to see just what's going on. We have not yet gotten any kind of request for how many premiums we have to deliver for fall. So we're trying very hard, and we're trying to get answers. And we share your frustration in trying to get answers about anything.
Oh, okay. So I'll just keep calling you guys back. At least you answer the phone.
Yeah, well, we can commiserate together. That's pretty much
right. Right. Okay. Well, happy holidays, you guys. Thanks
all right.
so much.
Get home safe.
All right.
On the flip side of that, I would like to mention that the reason we're not doing a fundraiser now is because we've done well enough. This comes from BAI management. We've done well enough with just our off-air donations, with people just donating of their own accord rather than being asked to on a pledge drive, that we don't have to do the December drive this month. So,
yeah.
We're very grateful for that.
Wait,
of course.
Is that what they told you? Real reason is that Kim Jong-un was not pleased having another fundraiser in December.
Well, Dear Leader invented the concept of a fundraiser, he should have thought of this. But no, we have been doing well enough off just your random support, which is great. So if you're into giving that random support again, without getting our special premiums, because we haven't got those and we're still working on the past ones, but you can go to give to the numeral to WBAI.org and throw something at your favorite show, which you hope is us, and get some nice WBAI premiums from there.
And it's probably tax deductible. If that means something to you.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, it is.
Partake.
It is. Let's take one more phone call, and then I think we have to get out of here. But on the final word on the premium issue, we will not rest till they're all taken care of. It's just we have a lot of frustration to deal with ourselves, so we'll keep trying. We won't give up. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bernie. Bernie, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Bernie, it's DK. Could you send me a little more detail on the shortwave Russian woodpecker at Yahoo? Could you send me this week?
That stopped transmitting back in the 80s.
Yep. Oh, but I thought you're doing it now. Could you grab my email? Send me a little more.
No, why don't you just email? Just send an email to oth@2600.com, and we'll get back to you.
I never get through. Could you send me?
How do you know you don't get through to an email address?
Russian woodpecker at Yahoo.
oth@2600.com. We'll get it.
When you don't get it, send to me. Russian woodpecker
okay.
at Yahoo.
As soon as we don't get it, we will respond. That's a guarantee. Thanks for that. Thanks for that call. Thanks for that last wish for this particular show. Again, for those of you out there that do believe your email will get through, oth@2600.com is our email address. And, we have a lot of fun things to look forward to. Next week will be a fun show as well. Kyle, you and I will be in Germany.
Everyone enjoy National Eggnog Day.
Yes. It is National Eggnog Day today.
Yes.
How convenient.
The 26th is National Wining Day and National Candy Cane Day. 25th is obvious.
They have it all covered. Rob, yep. Did you have something?
Just happy holidays in general, whichever one or more apply to you.
All right. Happy holidays, Bernie.
Happy holidays.
And we'll see you all on the radio next week. Have a good night.
Andrea Katz, WBAI Interim Development Director, here with Tony Ryan, Interim Operations Director, and we are pleased to announce that there will be no preemptions for a December on-air fund drive.
Instead, we are asking you to help us reach and beat our December fundraising goal through your off-air donation.
From the day after Christmas, December 26th, until January 31st, donate $100 to WBAI and be entered to win the opportunity to guest host the morning show. You'll be invited to work with the producers on an issue important to you.
We will also give away tickets to three listeners and their guests to attend all WBAI events, lectures, and concerts during 2015.
So donate $100 or more in the name of your favorite show for any thank you gift on give2wbai.org or by becoming a BAI Buddy monthly contributor. Just call 212-209-2950 or pledge online at give2wbai.org.
Welcome. Welcome to the Christmas Eve 2014 edition of the Personal Computer Show. This holiday show is pre-recorded, so we are not taking any telephone calls. We have lined up a list of year-end topics to be presented by members of the staff. On the show, the listener may hear contradictory statements, but as in computing, there is more than one way of solving a problem. The view of each person may or may not be representative of the entire staff, but with an expanded perspective, the listeners get the benefit of all advice given. Before we begin with the year-end editorial views from each staff member, some listeners have noted that I begin each program now with, "Hello, world." Why? Hello, world. Well, our listening audience, which was originally situated within a 90-mile radius from the Empire State Building, has expanded over time with internet streaming. We can be heard now live over all different time zones. So instead of the typical good evening, it was time to welcome all those who are tuned in to say, "Hello, world." The "Hello, world" message has become the traditional first program that many people learn. In general, it is simple enough so that people who have no experience with computer programming can easily understand it, especially with the guidance of a teacher or a written guide. While minimal test programs such as this existed since the development of programmable computers, the tradition of using "Hello, world" as the text program was probably started by its use as an example program in the book The C Programming Language by Brian Kernighan and Dennis Ritchie. Brian Kernighan actually wrote the first "Hello, world" program as part of the documentation for the BCPL programming language developed by Martin Richards. BCPL was used while C was being developed at Bell Labs a few years before the publication of Kernighan and Ritchie's C book in 1972. I have often claimed that my sidekick Joe King's views are on the left, although he claims to be a centrist. On the other hand, he of course claims my views are on the right. I claim my views are that of a centrist. Of course we are both correct as our goals are the same. We agree to disagree. On the air it sounds more like we disagree to agree. When it comes to computing, he's looking at the world more from a philosophical point of view, and I am seeing it more in a binary format. But at the end of the day, we actually agree on the same things. We have been presenting the Personal Computer Show since August the 4th of 1983. Our audience is you, the consumer, and we have been calling it the way we see it in the best interest of the consumer. If the product or service is subpar, we will say it on the air. Personal computing, which is really access to the computer for the common man, really hasn't changed in the last 40 years. What have changed are the tools and platforms. Recently, I was playing a piece of music for my teenage granddaughters, and they wanted to know what was that clickety-clackety sound with the music. That sound was a typewriter song written by Leroy Anderson back in 1953. My 13-year-old granddaughters wanted to know what is a typewriter. For the record, a typewriter is a writing machine that produces characters similar to typeset print by means of a manually operated keyboard that actuates a set of raised types. The tools have changed, but the functions have not. So as we review what has happened during the past year, there are all sorts of technological changes, but the central theme is still personal computing. Over the period of the past 30 years, we have had different people joining us on the air. For this Christmas Eve show, Michael Horowitz, our webmaster, will present his year-end views, and Marty Winston, who publishes the News Tip Bulletin, will present his year-end report on the consumer electronics. But before we get to those reports, let's first hear from Joe King.
If when I first came across what we now call the Internet, you had asked me to explain the meaning of net neutrality, I wouldn't have known what you're asking me. Tim Wu, he's a law professor at Columbia University Law School, hadn't yet published his 2003 term-defining paper on network neutrality and broadband discrimination. He published it in the Journal of Telecommunications and High Technology Law. It's available online for you. Well, now that it's been published, everybody can misquote it, misinterpret it, and in general, they can act ignorant and stupid, and they do. He, however, has been quite clear about it. He's in favor of using Title II of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and the Telecommunications Act of 1934 to assure that everything that passes over the Internet passes equally without regard to its content or purpose. Now, lots of people say that if the FCC does that, it'll be a bad thing, a costly thing, a waste of whatever. Well, Wu says all of those complaints are nonsense. The only thing that's bad about it is it would stop some corporations from overcharging and using their size and power to hurt the consumer, to keep new developments from happening, to keep small companies out of the competition. Well, this is going to be one of the major regulations of the new year, and I think everyone agrees that the Internet and all of its component parts are as vital a part of modern living as the telephone, electricity, transportation. Over a million people took the time and trouble to get the FCC to learn their opinions on this, but there's no reason why the FCC has to read and act on those individual opinions. Politics is what got the commissioners appointed. Politics is what will control their regulations. But this isn't the only dramatic item on the 2015 agenda. How many of us have a simple point-and-shoot camera? Is it a standalone? Or is the camera a feature of some other electronic gadget? Did you buy a new computer this year? Was it a desktop? A laptop? A tablet? How about a phablet? Does one gadget do it for you, or did you have to buy more than one? Now, I have a smartphone. It's not only a communications device, but it's a handheld computer. I also have a tablet, but it's not only a laptop computer, but it's an e-reader. My wife has an e-reader, but it's a tablet. And then it's a tablet, which is a phone, and so on. Each of them has a primary and a secondary and even a tertiary purpose, and as more are developed and introduced, as more complexity is built in, as more power is in your pocket, the prices drop. In 1980, more or less, I bought a hard disk for under $300. It could hold less than 100 megabytes of storage. Last week, I could have bought, for about the same price, $260, a hard disk with 8 terabytes, or that would be 8,388,608 megabytes. 8 million megabytes. I have more power and memory and storage in my Samsung smartphone than I did in the Honeywell mainframe computer I worked on in the 1960s. About 10 years ago, I bought a 27-inch Sony CRT television. It could accept input from my cable television set-top box, from an over-the-air antenna, or from my videotape recorder. It could output to external or external speakers or earphones, and that's it. It cost me around $600. It was state-of-the-art and weighed 110 pounds. Today, for half that price, and less than half that weight. I can get a 40-inch flat panel TV with 1080i resolution, that's more than twice the resolution, cable Wi-Fi, OTA antenna, and HDMI input. It can record or playback through a set-top box. I can use my cell phone or laptop or tablet for input or for control. Depending on my supplier, I can use it as a telephone or even an email terminal. What's my point? Everything is changing constantly, continuously. Prices come down, technology goes up. Hank has told me time and time and time again, buy what you need today. Tomorrow you'll be able to buy more for less. So now to the question Hank has asked. What will come our way next year? Will we be able to jack into the net directly from our brains? Do you remember that science fiction book by Gibson? What was it called? Something about cyber something? Will we implant a chip which will let us see a monitor in our cornea without Google Glass? Will we have a computer and a wristwatch which will project holographically into a space on our desks? I don't think so. But that last item is being pitched for investment right now. I can tell you where on the internet you can go to make a contribution. Well, now I have one last product review for this end of the year show. PaperPort 14 Professional. It's a fairly expensive program. There is a more economical personal version for half the price, but I think the professional version is worth every penny I paid for it. This is a desktop management system which uses your scanner to copy documents, photos, clippings, and it outputs PDF files, among others. Plus, PaperPort connects seamlessly to cloud services, delivering anytime, anywhere access to the files you've stored in the cloud. You know, it lets me organize my material in different folders and subfolders so I can quickly locate anything I need. I can store, share, and find documents on the network or in the cloud. The access to my files is using Apple or Android phones and tablets and desktops. So for fast, professional, and productive scanning made easy from any device, I use PaperPort Professional. It's an industry-standard program and lets you also create and fill out electronic forms quickly and neatly. You know, Hank, here's a resolution I'm making this year, a New Year's resolution that I know you'll approve of. I promise that I'm no longer going to put the receipts, orders, mail, notes, photos, and other pieces of printed matter in that shoebox over there in the corner. I promise you I will regularly back up my PaperPort folder to a USB thumb drive, and I promise